Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show. Clint Sterner's Football at 4.
Four panels, eight laces. I'm here with my man Ron, the show Ugly, and we welcome in my man John McClain, yeah. NFL Hall of Famer. He was in Kansas City last night. He's made it back to Houston safely. John, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing well, man. John, real quick, obviously that was a tough night for the Texans last night. Texans Nation is drowning their sorrows as we speak on this beautiful Friday in Houston, but Let's start out with just an overall observation of the difference in the two teams, John. When I watched that game last night, it was clear that Frank Clark and Chris Jones went through training camp and were ready to play football. It didn't appear that J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus were. It was clear that that receiving core and Pat Mahomes went through training camp and were working together and had good chemistry, and it appeared that Deshaun Watson and his crew didn't. When you were live in person, when you were there, did you see a difference in the speed of which one team was playing versus the other, and it seemed like they had been a little bit accelerated?
It looked like one team was a defending Super Bowl champion and the other one was not. And I think it was also a case of the coordinators for the Texans, Tim Kelly and Anthony Weaver. They could have used the preseason too. And I understand on the game plan what they wanted to do was eliminate big plays, and they did. Mahomes averaged only 6.6 per attempt. That was the third lowest of his career, but they killed him with the running game. And then they threw short touchdown passes for 6-2 and I can't even remember what Hills was, 15, I think. And no, it was less than that. So they killed him with the short passes inside the 10-yard line, and they killed him with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They couldn't stop the run. They were horrible. They were terrible at it last year. It's amazing to me how far this run defense has fallen since 2018 when they gave up like 81 yards a game. Down.
John, you mentioned a run defense, man. It appeared that Whitney Mercilus and Benardrick McKinney and J.J. Watt had a tough night, man, and it brings up, you know, one big question. The guy in the middle, D.J. Reader, was there last year. I knew that the Texans were going to miss D.J. Reader. I did not expect it to be something that just jumped off the page. As you watch Edwards-Helaire run for 130-some-odd yards, and you watch a team that usually is a pass-happy football team, and you look to be entertained by how they throw the football to their tailbacks, but for them to line up and manhandle your front, that's a problem. No D.J. Reader, who's currently in Cincinnati. How do the Texans, how do they replace D.J. Reader? Can they replace D.J. Reader? What do you think that plan is inside there?
Let's be honest. Last year, D.J. was there, and they were horrible against the run. They were 25th in the NFL. They gave up 121.1 yards a game, so I guess if he hadn't been there, they would have been 32nd because he wasn't there last year and they were awful. So 2 years ago, what was the difference when they were great? They had Watt healthy for a season. They had Clowney playing 15 games. They had Reader in the nose. They had better people, same linebackers. And so Charles Amenihu had a bad game against the run. They pulled him out one time, put in Carlos Watkins. So that front seven, especially the linebackers, You know, the linebackers are supposed to be better, but they were there last year when they were awful against the run, and they were awful last night.
At least did P.J. Hall kind of jump out to you a little bit, John? That was something that at least you could salvage to say, all right, it looked bad with the run defense, but at least 96 jumped out a bit.
That's a good point, Ron, because he did. Maybe it's because less was expected of Hall, but he was one of the few bright spots. But I didn't have any expectations from him when he came in overweight and out of shape. But they let him get some playing time. You know, they're going to rotate those guys, see if they can get the right formula. It's amazing to me. 2 years ago, they were great against the run, third in the league. They went 11-5 and didn't win a playoff game. Last year, they were 25th, terrible against the run, and they finished 10-6 and won a playoff game. So, you know, if you don't give up big plays, and they gave up that short touchdown after Tyrann Mathieu hit Watson as he threw it and was intercepted and returned 33 yards. So they gave up that short 17-yard touchdown. But generally, if teams run on you and they don't throw the balls down the field, it's going to be a close game. But I would imagine now Baltimore, which killed them through running and through the air last year, will come in with that same formula, and it's going to start with the running back and Lamar Jackson, who is the best runner in the league quarterback.
John, what about Whitney Mercilus, man? I know you could sit. I mean, he's a linebacker, obviously. But to me, here's the question to me is if this team's not going to be any better against the run, and I don't want to make too much of one game that's coming off of no preseason, but I'm really concerned about this team's ability to stop the run based off of some of the stats you just mentioned and the absence of DJ Reader and what we saw week one. If this team's not going to be able to stop the run any better, how do you justify keeping Jacob Martin off the field? Because I tell you what, he's one guy that looked like he had been in a legit training camp, and he looked like Frank Clark coming off the football. He was shot out of a rocket a couple of times.
Well, if Martin didn't play nearly as much as I thought he would, but they're going to play him in passing situations. He had a great training camp. I would have thought he'd played more. He played last in the game last night, and I know it's about the packages and what they think the Chiefs are doing, but he played less than he played anywhere down the stretch last year and in the playoffs. And I know they think because he's 242 or 7, they think of him because of his speed and quickness, and he's a good pass rusher, but it doesn't matter to me. You need to shuffle him around like they did with Hall, like they did with Watkins. Give those other guys a chance and see if they can do a better job.
Wide 80. Clint Sterner on the show, Ugly on Sports Radio 610. Houston Sports Leader. We're joined by NFL Hall of Famer John McClain. John, stay on the defensive side of the football, man. What in the hell was going on in the secondary with Justin Reed playing corner on a legit receiver, and where was Lonnie Johnson?
Lonnie Johnson was in, then he was out, then he was back in. A lot of times they'll pull him out because they'll make mental mistakes and then give him another chance. And I don't have a problem with a secondary because the longest play they gave up was 19 yards. And when you get down close and Mahomes is on the move, going right, left, throwing those crossing routes to Kelce and Hill and all that, they're really good at that. But he didn't get beat deep. They took that away. But I don't know. We'll have to ask Bill O'Brien about that, about the way they were moving guys around in their secondary. And he can say, well, he only threw for 211 yards, which is true, but they also didn't throw it that much.
Red 22. Hut, hut, hut. All right, John, I want to ask you a question. Sean Pendergast and I had a conversation last night. I think they had him and Seth had it this morning on their show. Did you feel like Bill O'Brien should have went for it a few times in this game on fourth down, shown a little bit more aggression considering the Kansas City Chiefs were on the other sideline?
The kind of aggression he showed in the playoff game where he went for a fake punt.
That was my exact.
He needed more than 31 points. No.
Wow, that was easy. Not even on the fourth and five?
Not at midfield. No, I didn't think so because at that point, I know based on what happened last year and the way the Chiefs were running the ball in this game, they weren't going to run away with a game if the Texans didn't turn it over and they hadn't had those three straight incompletions at the end of the first half, and then Fairbairn not coming close on his field goal, and then they come back to make it 17-7. So, no, I don't have a problem with not going for it in, if midfield or you're into the field. Once you cross midfield, to me, anything goes, because if he'd done it and he hadn't made it, then everybody's been on him as being a muttonhead.
See, I wouldn't have been, because I remember watching John's in Baltimore.
Yeah.
John Harbaugh, when they played the Chiefs last year, and he said to hell with it. He went for every fourth down, almost didn't matter where he was on the field, because he just felt like, I got to score. And yes, they were running the ball, but in an instant, the Chiefs can turn from running the football to saying, we're going to try to put 21 on you real fast. And I just think you got to keep pushing it with that group. And you're at the 50, fourth and five. That's still one of the things that I was really disappointed in last night, was it just felt like overall they weren't real aggressive in play calling and down the field. And then right there, that decision also leads to not being real aggressive.
They wanted to throw the ball down the field a lot. Watson didn't have time to do that. So they weren't. And a few times they did do it, it didn't work. They were covered. And Tim Kelly, you know, I didn't expect him to come out and score 50 points or 30 points in his first game, but I also didn't expect him to fall behind 31-7. At that point, they'd been outscored 82-14 since they had the 24-0 lead in the playoff game, 82-14.
That's wild, right? And here's the deal. Ultimately, the thing that we know after one game is the Texans are the gap between them and the defending Super Bowl champ, or them and being a Super Bowl contender. There's a large gap there, and it's pretty obvious at this point in time.
All right, John McClain is with us throughout the entire 4 o'clock hour. He was at Arrowhead at Kansas City, watched it in person. We'll continue this great Football Friday presented by Carbox Hoppadello IPA. The General, the Hall of Famer, John McClain. More with him coming up.
Ron, have some dignity, will you?
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hoppadillo IPA. Here's Clint Sterner and the show.
Yes, sir. We are here with the General, with the Hall of Famer, John McClain. And I really want to get this. I want to get inside of Arrowhead with you, because you were there last night. Because the thing to me that was most disappointing, if I'm a Texans fan, is I looked out there, John, and that didn't look like a team that, as my partner Clint would say, that was skull drug 51-7 run put on them the last time they were in that stadium. That didn't look like a team that had to sit and stew all off season and hear everything about how great the Chiefs were and how everything of man, they just whooped y'all tails and all this and that. They didn't look like a team that was just fired up for that game to get revenge, any of that. And that was probably the most disappointing part to me, with the lack of fire that it was. It felt like a preseason game, or it felt like a game against Jacksonville. From the jump, man, how were they doing warm-ups? Did they seem like this was a special game to them?
They said it was. They acted like it was in interviews, and then they went out and played, like you said, a preseason game. That's a great point. I didn't see emotion. I didn't see killer instinct, that sense of urgency to come out and fly to the ball. It looked like they were on their heels all the time on defense, like they were thinking too much. The Chiefs kept them off balance. The Chiefs had a great plan. Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator, will get a head coaching job after this year. Last year, his leading rusher, Damian Williams, didn't even have 500 yards. Clyde Edwards-Helaire may have that after four games. And so because they know Edwards-Helaire is a good runner, you know, they had drives of 80, 75, 91, and 75 yards. No big touchdowns in there on big plays. So in this game, at least, they changed their MO. They saw the running game was going to work, and they stuck with it. And they just manhandled the Texans up front on both sides of the ball. I mean, it was embarrassing. When you're down 31-7, I don't care what the final score was, You know, that's embarrassing. Now, we've seen Texans blow big games and bounce back and win. They had two games last year, Carolina and Denver, that were terrible. Then they were humiliated in Baltimore. So I fully expect them to bounce back. But last year, New Orleans, they get beat on a record field goal by Will Lutz with no time left to lose 30-28. And nobody could hold that against them. But on this one, considering the way they were embarrassed in the playoffs, you would have thought they would have come out, you know, just fire coming out of their eyes when they came on the field. But I didn't see that either, and I was there. As far as the warm-ups, I don't pay attention to that. I was more interested in what they were going to do to protest. We heard about ahead of time they were going to have a show of unity. But there was – it just looked like they weren't ready to play.
John, I want to play this Deshaun Watson audio from after the game, and I want to get your take on it real quick. This is Deshaun Watson when he was asked how he thought he played last night.
Yeah, I mean, I was sharp. You know, I took what the defense gave me. They took away a lot of the deep shots and try to give my guys, you know, some opportunities to make plays. And, you know, and sometimes we capitalized and sometimes we didn't. So we just got to continue to grow from there. And I did what I needed to do to try to, you know, stay as close as possible and keep this team in the lead and reach to, you know, try to win the game.
John, does that tone and that message after the game that you watched, does that surprise you? That's the response to that question?
No, because that's the way he always reacts after losses. You know, he's one of the first ones. He's not going to say anything remotely controversial. He's going to just move on and say the same thing. Now, I'll say this about Watson. He had to throw way too much with no time. I was watching the Texans improve their pass protection last year and seeing Frank Clark eat up Titus Howard too many times. I was disappointed that their pass protection wasn't better. But Watson, still holds the ball. What they got to do against Baltimore, a team that just obliterated them on the pass rush last year, that ball has got to come out faster. He's got to be decisive. He's got veteran receivers that know what they're doing. And three of them had trouble contributing, but they've got to change their MO. They got to play faster. The ball's got to be snapped. That back foot hits the ground, it's got to come out. They've got to have a game where he's not being forced to run around like a pinball in a pinball game and just trying to either run or find a receiver. They've got to be more decisive.
John, did you watch last night's game and think, boy, Deshaun really misses DeAndre Hopkins?
No, I don't think he would have made any difference when they were down 31-7. He was here when they were down 51-7. So I think it would have helped them in third down, maybe third and short or middle, because DeAndre averaged 11 yards a catch. But I think, yes, he missed him because he's his favorite receiver, a comfort. Kind of comfort zone for him, but I don't think that would have made any difference in winning or making the score more respectable when it was 31-7 early in the fourth quarter.
The Hall of Famer John McClain is with us. A couple of the positive notes from last night, and one in particular, a guy that I know me and you obviously deems that me and you are very close, but we both thought that David Johnson was going to have a bounce back season. From what you saw last night and him being used in the passing game and the way he was able to run, that jump cut that he's so known for in Arizona that was on display last night, did it make you feel like he may be even better than you maybe anticipated?
I figured if he's healthy, he's going to have a good season. One reason is he's the starting running back. He's got a quarterback who's going to take a lot of heat off of him because the defense is worried about the pass. He's also got a head coach who made that trade who's going to want to showcase him. So he had 11 carries, 77 yards. If they hadn't been down as much as they were, he would have got more carries in the second half. He averaged 10 yards of catch like he usually does. But I thought he was the bright spot on offense, and I think everybody that was trashing him now may think, maybe he's got a chance to be pretty good, although one game doesn't mean anything in the whole scheme of things. But if you went in thinking Johnson was bad, and a lot of people did, you got to rethink that based on what you saw last night.
There's no doubt about that, John. If people are being honest with themselves, I mean, there's the screen game, you know, that one drive, the wide receiver and the running back screen game was nice, but his ability on the screen to catch the ball and just effortlessly, you know, avoid tacklers, but also set up his offensive line to make blocks and the touchdown run. I mean, he sets an offensive lineman up perfect on a block, and then he makes a defender miss in the hole, completely miss, and he outruns three guys to the corner. That's not something that I've seen from the Texans over the last few years. And if that guy can stay healthy, he's going to put up good numbers. I'll also add that the on the interception, that's 100% on Deshaun Watson. I mean, Fells is blocking Tyrann Mathieu, and David Johnson is wide open underneath the check down. Could have went 15 or 20 yards, and those are things that Deshaun's got to get better at. But that would have just added to his total statistically, and I mean, it would have been very easy for David Johnson to put up 100 plus rushing and some really good numbers in a receiving game as well.
Yeah, he only had 11 carries, and they had only 22. They still got 118 yards, and that's fine. That's close to what they averaged last year, and Watson contributed that too. But when you're averaging 7 yards a carry, and you have a 19-yard touchdown run, which showed how quick he can cut, he can break tackles because he's 200. We don't have accurate rates, but I'm guessing he's somewhere around 228. And he's fast. He beat him to the corner. So they got big plans for him, and he was the bright spot on offense. And I'm sure Bill O'Brien, even though he's crushed at the way they played and how they lost, he's got to feel good that Johnson played as well as he did.
John McClain, he's here with us. And remember, what we're trying to do, we've had a lot of fun giving you the best Texans coverage here this week, but we also want to try to help in the community. The Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation, we are partnering with here at Sports Radio 610, trying to raise to get to $100,000. This is the last day, trying to get to $100,000 to get at least 6 books for all these underprivileged kids in the Houston area. Poverty is the root cause of literacy, and like 38% of Houston's children live in poverty. We want to kind of help change those statistics. So go ahead and text HTX Reads to 41444 to contribute any type of donation. We suggest around $30 because that can get 6 books for each one of these underprivileged children. So text HTX Reads to 41444 to contribute. Special thanks to South Fork, Chrysler Dodge, Jim Adler, Phillips 66, McCree Ford, and all of our amazing listeners who have donated here. But you can continue to do that more and more as we try to reach our goal of $100,000. Friday, today is the last day. Please, please, please help and donate.
Yeah, 61% of low-income homes do not have – they have 0 books in the house for the kids. Well, that problem can obviously not be solved, but it can be assisted for sure. And, you know, the other thing is that with this organization and with this program, kids get to actually select their book and show – what was that number, like 90? Kids are 91% more likely to read the book if they actually get to pick it out and it's something that they're interested in. And with this program, the kids get to pick their books out. They go and they pick their own books out that they're interested in. And so pick your phone up. Do your part, baby. HTX Reads to 41444.
That's right. And remember, coming up, 445, text in, hashtag Dear John with any question you want to ask John. And John was in Kansas City, but anything sports-related, non-sports-related, 445, hashtag Dear John. Text in 713-572-4610. We continue with the general who was at Kansas City last night and was able to take in that Texans-Chiefs game more with the Hall of Famer next.
This is 2020. You ain't going to be all right.
Here's Clint Sterner and the show.
Text in Dear John, hashtag Dear John, your name and where you're from, 713-572-4610, 445. We do this each and every day, every Friday when the Hall of Famer is with us, John McClain. And I wanted to get from you, how was it? I know you had been wondering how things were going to be now that we're in COVID NFL. And how was it in terms of there was fans there. How loud was it? Because I hear they didn't pipe in noise, and everything that you had to go through entering the stadium. How different were things this time?
First time I went to Arrowhead Stadium was 1980, and every time I've been there, it's been a sellout, the sea of red of 73,000 plus in that stadium. So I rode last night with our photographer extraordinaire, Brett Comer. He was a chauffeur for Brian Smith and I, and we whizzed right in. It was great not having to fight traffic, not having to fight all those fans tailgating in the two stadiums stadium parking lots. And they had about 16,000 there, and it was a piece of cake getting there. But then because of the rules about getting in the press box, we had to kind of jump through hoops, but that's okay because I understand why they did it. And we got up to the press box, and where the visiting media is, second row far left, usually I think there's 12 seats, and now there were five. And it was great. We could spread out. And I had TVs in front of me in the field. Was way below, and the press box is enclosed, and we could still hear the fans. It wasn't like they put them all in the lower bowl. They had them spread out all over the stadium, top rows in the corner. They kept now. You had blocks of tickets you bought, you could buy for your family and friends, and nobody wore their mask in the parking lot. And I know they weren't social distancing because we had to walk through them, but once they went in, they were required to wear masks. And I thought I could hear them cheering. And I thought they did a really good job. They booed the Texans when they came out originally. I tweeted they should have cheered them and thanked them for blowing that 24-point lead. They booed them when they went in. And then they booed them when they came out after the national anthem. And they did boo during the show of unity. There were some people trying to say they were going cheese, and I heard somebody yell Trump for 2020, and they booed him. No, Brett Comer, our photographer, was right down on the bottom in the middle of the stadium where the photographers have to be since they can't be on the sideline, and they were booing. And I got questions. People said, why would they boo players lining up in midfield of a show of unity? And I had a one-word answer, alcohol. Because most of the times that's at the root of it. And Bill O'Brien said he didn't hear him because he wasn't paying attention because they did boo.
John, you talk about the social distancing and the mask and things of that nature, and we hadn't even thought about it today with the way that the Texans played yesterday. But, I mean, how big is the test results going to be? I'm assuming they probably tested them last night or this morning. With the Kansas City players I'm talking about, how big are those results going to be? Do you expect there to be any problems? Will that be a topic of conversation? Heck, it's the first game that's played at the NFL level. You got to think that the eyes are on those results, right?
They are, but I'll put it like this. You and Ron could hug and kiss in the studio.
That's right.
And if neither one of you had the virus, you're not going to pass it on. And the NFL gets tested every day. They've done a phenomenal job. So unless guys had snuck away, like some are doing in other sports, and gone to clubs or whatever they're doing, and they came back with it, then these two teams should be in great shape. But what you worry about now is regular season. You don't have control over players as much as you do in preseason. And when you go on the road, that's the safest thing you can possibly be. Because once the players get to the stadium to get on the buses, and they have extra buses because of social distancing, once they get there, you know, they belong to Bill O'Brien. They get to the stadium, they're on their buses, they stay at the hotel, they're there through dinner and meetings, and then next morning meetings and breakfast, and they go to the game. So they keep emphasizing don't break protocols. In the NFL, the union is not powerful enough to keep the players getting paid if they break protocols like in baseball. So if you got to get quarantined 2 weeks, that's going to cost you two game checks. And a lot of guys can't afford that.
John McClain with us. Remember, text in 713-572-4610. Dear John, hashtag Dear John. Any question, sports or non-sports related, he'll answer. That's coming up here in about 4 minutes. Well, we've been trying to figure this out today. What was the deal with Randall Cobb, do you think? What do you think with that he didn't get a single target until the game was well out of reach, maybe the last couple minutes of the game, he finally got his first target. This is an off-season pickup, somebody, especially them not being able to go down the field, that he wasn't involved in the game. What do you think that was about?
I think that was about Deshaun Watson. Got a lot of players out there. They opened up with two tight ends, and he had Brandon Cooks. He only had two catches for 20 yards. Cobb finally got involved on one of those late drives after the game was out of reach. He had two for 23 because he was throwing the ball. No, other than David Johnson, nobody had more than two catches except Will Fuller. So they didn't utilize most of them because they didn't have the ball. They didn't. The Chiefs usually are on the short end of the time of possession because they throw the ball so much for big plays, and they dominated the time of possession. Last year in those two games, the Texans had a huge advantage both times, and this time the Texans kept the offense off the field a lot by dominating the clock. It ended up being 34-47 to 25-13. I think of familiarity more. You'll see Cobb and those guys, but all four of those wideouts are not going to get balls. Kenny Stills dropped the ball right in his hands, had no catches, and then Fuller played a good game. And the most important thing is he didn't get hurt.
John, what about Jordan Akins? I think one thing about this offense that's glaring, that just is a decision instead of a need to get more work, is Jordan Akins has got to be featured over Darren Fells, right? I mean, I think that's, to me, that's one thing that jumps off the screen is Darren Fells, the inability to run after catch. He gets beaten pass protection by Tyrann Mathieu. It's one of those things, like, I don't know how you keep Jordan Akins from being on the field more than anybody else, and or which you would think would be more, would create more opportunities for him in the run game. I mean, in the pass game, I'm sorry.
They're totally different players, and Watson has a comfort level with Fells when they're down close to the goal line, or they need, say, 4 or 5 yards for a first down. But Akins can make plays. Last year he had 11.6 yards average per catch. I remember he had some good plays. He can run after the catch, but he's not a true tight end. He's not going to knock anybody on their butt. He's going to be used out on routes. And the problem is they got – four wide receivers, and they got him, and Dave, they want to throw to David Johnson too. But based on what we saw from Akins last night, I think they should try to get him the ball more.
Mm. That's the General John McClain, 713-572-4610. We do this each and every week. Text in hashtag Dear John. Any questions you want to ask, sports or non-sports related, he'll answer.
Let's kick off the weekend by asking the most respected Houston sports writer of all time anything you want. Submit your questions to the text line 713-572-4610. Include hashtag Dear John, along with name and city. And for today's Dear John, let's open up the mailbag.
All right, General, I got one for you. Start off here. General, do the Texans really attempt to sign Clowney? Did they attempt to sign Clowney? And if so, who may they look to sign now?
Well, first of all, it didn't just happen. From what I understand, after I checked it out last night, it happened back early in training camp that Bill O'Brien called him to gauge his interest, but he wasn't interested in coming back here.
Really? That is surprising to me. I mean, everyone here is about the ego of Bill O'Brien and all the, and really, he reached out. How about that?
That's what I heard.
How about Mike, that?
Mike Florio had that story last night on Pro Football Talk, said it was a late run, but it was an early run.
Thanks for clearing that up for us there,
the General.
All right, we got Dear John, Tina, and Dayton. Are you concerned with the offensive line given how Deshaun saw pressure last night?
I sure am. To me, that was one of the biggest disappointments. They improved as pass rushers last year, and they struggled last night, especially Titus Howard with Frank Clark. But Watson has got to get rid of the ball quicker.
All right. Our guy Splitty over in Deer Park, he says, Dear John, if you could meet and write a story on any non-athlete living today, Who would it be and why?
It would be Paul McCartney, because the Beatles shaped my youth when I was in fifth and sixth grade and junior high before they broke up. And I've always would love, if I could spend time with anybody, it would be Paul McCartney.
What was your favorite Beatles song?
Oh, God, I don't have one. There's so many great ones. Sometimes you guys give me a little warm-up, and I'll sing some to you.
Nice.
What?
Okay. Oh,
that's something we got to follow up on right there.
Okay. Mine is Hey Jude.
It's a classic. All right. Dear John, Dina and Katie wants to know, how many curse words did you say during the Texans game last night?
Well, Dina, I don't cuss at all about the Texans. I'm too busy writing on deadline. People wondering why I wasn't tweeting more, because you're writing on deadline. I'm trying to do on the Texans. I'm trying to do the grades, because we got to have them as soon as the game's over. And that, even though I've been doing it for 48 years now in this business, it's still it is a lot of pressure, because you don't have to write something that's going to be a Pulitzer winner, but you got to make it readable. By the way, one of my favorite songs, very underrated, is the song that my first wife sang to me, I Should Have Known Better.
Classic. All right, we got one here from a Clintonized side of town. Sterling in Baytown says, Dear John, what changes do you expect new defensive coordinator Weaver to make heading into the Baltimore matchup?
Well, Charles Omenihu started and didn't register. P.J. Hall had four tackles, and so I would imagine he's going to get some more playing time. I expected Omenihu to be better. Maybe he's a guy that should just be playing in passing situations. But you know what? I don't hold it against guys who haven't had a training camp in a preseason. They got to get better. Omenihu's going to get better. Martin's going to get more playing time. But I would like to see Hall get more playing time.
So how much of that was last night? How much would you percentage you would base that on? Man, these guys just ain't been playing enough football.
Well, that would be part of it, but the Chiefs look so good, but they're the world champions for a reason. They're damn good. They got the best quarterback. They got the best rookie. They got a great coach. They got a great defensive coach. Spagnuolo's done a great job for Bob Sutton. Do you guys know, over the last six games last season, the Chiefs were 6-4 after the Titans beat them. Then they went 6-0 the rest of the season. In those six games, they gave up 11 points a game. That was by far the best in the NFL.
Yep,
so they've now got a 10-game winning streak. And their defense, we think of them as being an offensive team because of Mahomes and Andy Reid. But their defense is pretty damn good.
Yeah, when they're rushing the passer like that, it cleans up a ton, and it cleaned up those issues they had in the back end. Because, hell, when Charvarius Ward broke his hand, both their starting corners were out.
All right, we got an interesting one here, John. Dear John, all three Houston teams, Astros, Texans, and Rockets, lost within 8 hours of each other yesterday. Do you believe this is possibly because of the show curse?
Oh, come on!
No, it is the fault that they all got their butts beat because they played teams that were better than them, and it was a trifecta of futility. First time in history it's happened.
So I say, that's not on me.
It's a bad day for Houston, no doubt about it. Okay, we got John in Conroe. He says, Dear John, the offense was more the same last night. Who holds more blame, Tim Kelly, Deshaun, or the receiving core?
Well, receivers can't get to make catches if their quarterback's having to run around for his life. I'll say it's the offensive line. Now, it wasn't all on them, but the guys up front have got to take control. They got to win the battle of the trenches, and they lost it.
How surprised were you with that? Because we've been talking about the improvement of the offensive line, and that's a big key of why I thought this offense, and I still believe it's just one game, as many people are losing it, but it's just one game. But that offensive line, how surprised were you they struggled that much yesterday?
Very.
That says it all right there. All right, last one. We got time for one more, John. Dear John, who is your all-time favorite quarterback to watch? Mike in Pasadena wants to know.
Oh, that's easy.
if you're talking about in Houston, it would be Warren Moon. If it's in the NFL, when I was a kid, it was Johnny Unitas. Then when I was covering the NFL, it was Joe Montana. And for the last, say, 10 or 12 years, it's been Tom Brady.
Yeah, for me, it's Aaron Rodgers. I just like watching Aaron Rodgers. Just
it's fun to watch that kid, ain't it?
It is. He's my guy. Mike Vick wasn't bad either. All right, John McClain, he was live at Arrowhead yesterday, giving us exclusive information that we couldn't get anywhere else. Hall of Famer, thank you so much for joining us. Have a good, safe weekend, John.
Remind me, Ron, when we're not on air, to tell you what Mahomes told me to tell you about disrespecting him. And it's not pretty. Thank you, guys. Right. Have a great weekend.
All right. That's John McClain, the general. He's with us each and every Friday in the 4 o'clock hour. All right, coming up next, the stories you need to know. And there is some big news with the Rockets. You don't want to miss that. That's coming up
next. I love what y'all do. I'm in love with the show, man.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.